Hello and welcome to episode 49 of Good Copy, Bad Copy. I'm Emily King, Radix's content marketing manager, and I'm joined by Fiona Campbell-Howes, founder and lead copywriter at Radix Communications.
Hello.
And I'm also joined by copywriter and content lead Steve George.
Hello.
In this episode, we are discussing writing for lead nurturing campaigns. With marketing automation platforms now commonplace across B2B, a lot of ideas about best practice for lead nurturing campaigns have developed. And what's acceptable for email campaigns has changed, at least since we last podcasted about any of this several years ago. If you have any questions or comments about this episode, please feel free to email us via podcast@radix-communications.com or you can tweet us @radixcom. So, Steve and Fiona, I wanted to talk to you about lead nurturing emails because most of the thought out there on lead nurturing campaigns comes from a marketing perspective and not a copywriting one. But first things first, I've been asked by David to ask if either of you have been told whether an email campaign you've worked on has been successful. And you know, are you ever told any of the KPIs or anything before you even write a campaign? You know, what's it being measured on? Is there any measurements?
See, David is a spectral presence.
Yes.
In our podcast.
Yes.
This month. He couldn't be with us.
No.
But he's feeding us questions. Have I ever been told that an email campaign I've worked on has been successful? Yes. But as ever with the feedback that we get as copywriters, it's been kind of anecdotal feedback. Mm-hmm. So you'll happen to be on a call with a client and they'll happen to say, oh, yeah, we got some really good results from that campaign that you wrote. But it's never very kind of structured feedback. Whenever we write for an email campaign, we'll always provide three subject line options in the kind of hope and belief that clients are going to do A/B testing on those subject lines and sort of come back to us and let us know which ones performed best. And, you know, and then we could have some thoughts as to why. But if that happens, in my experience, we don't ever get to hear about it. So we don't get to learn that kind of thing. I don't know if you found the same, Steve.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll get abstract feedback, things like the campaign performed quite well, or perhaps even some broad figures. But as copywriters, what we really need is more specific feedback on those individual parts, the results of A/B testing, which particular emails in the campaign got higher click-throughs, so that we can learn from the best performing parts of the campaign. I mean, the thing is, nurture campaign is a massive, multifaceted thing, and we're not getting feedback on the specifics, really.
Yes, I think, you know, if any of our clients are listening, we would really like to hear feedback, especially if you're doing A/B testing. We'd love to hear the feedback from that.
Well, then, obviously, we've been talking about subject lines a lot, but considering that we tend to provide several, are they one of the harder parts to write for emails if you don't know what the feedback is, or even just overall?
They're a challenging thing to write. They're, you know, it can be a very, very difficult part of the process, but it's part of the process where you need to dedicate a lot of your time. You'd expect them to be challenging because you need to focus so much on them. You know, if they don't succeed, the whole email doesn't succeed. You need to put a lot of your attention towards it and to focus in on the subject lines.
Yeah, I mean, I used to think they were the hardest part of the email to write, but I think, you know, the amount of email campaigns that we've worked on, I think you kind of build up your own strategies for writing subject lines, and you're not starting from scratch each time. You know roughly how you're going to approach the subject lines. For me, it's always making them as specific as possible. You know, what specifically are you going to learn from opening this email? What specific value are you going to get? So it's really kind of understanding the kind of unique value of what we're offering in the email and making sure that comes out in the subject line.
I was going to say, I'm glad, even though I don't see the work that we send to clients that often, I am glad that we do not, in our emails, at least when we send them to clients, do the kind of subject lines which kind of go like RE or FWD or anything like that.
Oh, yeah, all those kind of cheaty, spammy ways to get people to open emails. No, no. Luckily, we've never been asked to do that, and no, we would never do that, no.
But what about how do you find writing calls to action? Because obviously, like, if somebody's actually managed to open the email, you know, or been convinced to open the email, there's another action that obviously that needs to do, and that's the call to action. How do you find process of dealing with those normally?
I find writing calls to action quite simple because usually by the time you've got to one, unless you might lead in a specific email format, you might lead with a call to action high up, in which case it has to be very strong. But if it's coming towards the middle to the latter part of the email, you've already set up the strength of what you're trying to promote. You spent a lot of attention already selling what you're trying to get people to click through to. So the CTA should be fairly simplistic, and you kind of go into that thinking, if they're not convinced to take a look at this already, I don't know what the button's going to make them do more than that.
Yeah, I completely agree. As long as you make it very clear what it is you want people to do and what value they're going to get from doing it, I think call to action is quite straightforward to write.
But then obviously you just mentioned sort of like length in the terms of like where we put the call to action. Has the length of individual emails changed? I remember when I used to do client work, you expected something like 200 words or more, and it felt even then kind of crazy to be writing that many words in the email when obviously you want, if they've opened it, you kind of want them to take that action, do the thing that you really want them to do rather than just leading them on for ages.
Yeah, we were just talking about this earlier, yeah. Weren't we? And Steve, you didn't think you could remember a time before 150 word emails.
No.
And I agree with Emily. I think, you know, there was a time a few years ago when the kind of standard length for a marketing email was 250 words. And you were spinning quite a narrative, and you were expecting that people were going to go with you all the way through this narrative. And, you know, you were telling them lots of interesting things. And then finally you got to the call to action to download the thing or access the thing. And I think just as the use of email has increased again, you know, people have realized that you can't have that many words in an email. You've got to get to the point quicker than that. You've got to give a flavor of what people are going to get very quickly, very succinctly, and then get them to take whatever action you want them to take. So I've definitely seen the length of emails come down. I mean, the standard is about 150 now, I think. But we're getting lots of people saying, can you make it as short as possible? You know, get it to under 50 words if you can.
I mean, obviously, unlike business consumer, we're dealing with business to business sort of like audiences with the emails that we write for clients. And in a way, we might expect people to open them in, say, a desktop environment. But a lot of business internet usage is happening on mobile now. And it has kind of made me wonder why for so long we persisted in having longer emails when so many were being opened on mobile, where you kind of need to deal with the fact that you've got a smaller screen to deal with and you're not going to display as much text in one go, even if the email design's responsive.
Yeah, no, I think that's definitely part of it as well. So the fact that there's a lot more emails being sent out because everyone's got their marketing automation platforms, and the fact that so many are being opened on mobile, that's driven the word count of them right down.
Obviously, like with call to action, there's various call to actions that these emails would be trying to elicit from people. But I know for a fact that we tend to obviously help with lead nurture campaigns that are to promote various types of other content. How do you find sort of like, do you have good enough content to work with, or that there's enough for the kind of stage that they're trying to handle these emails for? I mean, what's the content like that you get to work with?
Massive variance in the quality of content, really. I mean, I'm a great believer that good content fuels good promo, and the strongest nurture campaigns are the ones fueled by the best content, because, you know, if you take a look at an asset yourself when you're writing it, if you can see the strength of it, that's going to translate into your email copy and into your subject lines really well. You're going to be able to make the best case for them to click through. But often, as nurture campaigns have become a little more formulaic, people have kind of just sort of thought, we have all this content, what are we going to do with it? Let's jam it into a nurture campaign. Some of it isn't so good, but let's just get it in there. I'm sure it'll be fine. And you can really feel when nurture emails are leaning on bad content. And as a writer, it makes our jobs very difficult.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think, you know, as writers, we want to feel like we're offering something of value, don't we, to the people that are going to read this email. And, you know, if we don't feel that the piece of content that we're promoting offers value, it's very difficult to write that email.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think we do find sometimes, you know, marketers, you know, they are scrambling around to find, you know, a piece of content to fit in that particular part of the chain of the nurture campaign. And so you end up writing emails to promote like teaser videos themselves are only 30 seconds long. It's like, well, what can I say in this email that's less than what's in this teaser video? So I think there is a lot of that of you know, taking unsuitable content and trying to cram it into nurture campaigns. And I think we probably will see marketers and agencies moving away from that kind of approach and maybe thinking nurture campaign first rather than create lots of content and then as an afterthought create a nurture campaign trying to cobble all that content together into some kind of coherent narrative or journey.
Well, I mean, it does seem ridiculous that the how that content's getting out there in the first place is still perhaps an afterthought. I mean, obviously, as you're saying, sort of, hopefully it'll be less of the case in the future. But certainly in terms of content marketing best practice, when you're creating content, you know, places like Content Marketing Institute are kind of like, well, you need to think about how you're getting it out there, let alone what you're writing in the first place when you're actually pulling that content together.
Yeah, part of the challenge with the quality of content within these campaigns is in the fact that you should be thinking about how it's going to get to the person as the content's being created. But often these campaigns end up cobbled together, calling on content from this was made in 2014, this was made last year, and it's all been written for different people to serve different purposes. And it just doesn't tie together because people haven't thought about the combined vehicle for it all.
And I do wonder how often nowadays is the incident of not having direct access to content that you're meant to be writing emails about still happen? It used to be a bit of an issue.
Still somewhat frequent. I must say it's not as much of an issue as it used to be, but we'll still occasionally have to give our details away on a gated page just to access an asset we're writing about, which is obviously not ideal. I've had some great telephone conversations with salespeople from client companies. You know, I explain the situation. We usually have a nice little chat after, but not ideal.
That's a fun one. And also having to write an email to promote a piece of content that hasn't been written yet or hasn't been created yet, that's always a fun one as well. So yeah, but no, I don't think it's a huge issue, but occasionally we don't have direct access to the piece of content we're trying to promote.
So obviously that's a difficulty you face sometimes in writing nurturing campaigns. Are there any other difficulties that as writers you face?
For me, the big challenge is the tone of voice, you know, I hate to admit this as a copywriter because this is supposed to be our area of expertise, but imagining the person that you're writing for, and in an email it's meant to come across quite personally. I mean, there's been a big move to kind of very conversational, very personal marketing emails, almost as if you know the person that you're writing to. And for me, the fact that I don't know that person, I don't know, you know, what tone they're going to respond well to, or are they going to find this too matey? Are they going to find this kind of over familiar? Striking the right tone when you're trying to write something that's conversational and personal, to me, is the most difficult thing.
Mm. I think for me, a massive challenge is just it's something that's kind of evolving still. As nurture emails and nurture campaigns have become so formulaic at the hands of marketing automation formats and templates, is kind of guiding people away from the same old, without triggering in a client's mind, this is not the way things are done. You know, it's breaking them away from that entrenched way of thinking about these emails, and getting them to realize that the way things are done, the way things have been done for the past few years using automation, isn't necessarily the best way to achieve their KPIs. We want to get them a little bit out of their comfort zone, write some things that people might actually open, write some CTAs people might actually click on, but often what that looks like is radically different to this, what they're used to seeing.
Well, then what do either of you think works well in lead nurturing campaigns? What do you think will get people clicking?
What works well is likely to differ a lot between clients and between campaigns, but one of the best things you can do is really solid testing. And I think A/B testing of subject lines, for example, is a really, really great way for people at agencies to kind of nurture their clients away from that formulaic way of thinking. Because someone on paper may not think that using a particular approach to a subject line is appropriate or applicable. Once you've got hard data to show that people are more likely to open this, that's how you get them to realizing that this is the way it should be done, and we can't afford to keep thinking about these emails and approaching them in the exact same way.
And I think for me, it's just really knowing who's the reader, you know, who's going to open this email, what are they interested in, what are they looking for, and what is going to be of use to them in what we're offering them. So it's, you know, if there's a persona or if we've had a brief where there's a description of the audience, and especially, you know, if we're talking about a particular industry trend or a particular technology, what aspects are they likely to be interested in? And I can pull those out and make sure I'm pulling out the right aspects of whatever it is we're offering that will interest them. For the subject lines, knowing the kind of trigger words that are going to get their attention when they're looking in their email inbox and they think, GDPR compliance. Yes, I'm really interested in that, so I'm going to open that. I mean, that's probably a very bad example because literally everybody's sending emails about that. Plus, it has a massive bearing on how we will work with emails in future. But, you know, if you know what those words, those specific words, those specific topics that the reader is going to be interested in, and you can pull those out, put them in the subject line, make it very clear in the email what you're offering and what the value is. I think that for me is what makes an email work well.
So how often do either of you work within set templates? And if you do, do you find them helpful, kind of a hindrance? How does it often work for you guys?
I work within set templates quite a lot. I think at this point, it's not the case that people are having to share with us the templates every time and say, work within this. It's often the case that they've become just the way it's understood that this is the formula you'll be working to. This is the format you'll be working within. A couple of years ago, when marketing automation was really kicking off, people would share the templates with us and show them to us. And that's kind of, I put that as one of the big reasons why we moved from that 250 length to 150, because within certain formats, that was kind of max body copy. And while it's best practice, shorter is better. I think that the formats themselves kind of help to redefine what we see as the standard. But these days, it's more of a case that they've just become such an accepted way of doing things that you work within it naturally, if that makes sense.
I don't think I've worked with templates so much as you have, Steve. I mean, I've seen the kind of very, very rigid templates that sometimes you guys in the past have had to work to. I haven't done anything quite like that. But, you know, emails have tended to follow a natural kind of format and a natural flow. And you do tend to work within that kind of structure, it's true. And I personally like a template. I like a kind of structure to work within. I'm the kind of writer that likes to work within constraints and find ways to be creative within the constraints. So I quite like them, but not everybody does.
Out of interest, when it comes to obviously, like, I mean, you're not perhaps given as much audience information as you'd like, sort of persona information, but do you at least have like a rough idea where in, say, the funnel recipients might actually be when you're writing these emails?
Usually we do have a clear idea, and if we don't have a clear idea, we can determine it by looking at the content itself, and we can look at any given asset and sort of see what purpose that serves. But with a massive nurture campaign, when you're dealing with a lot of lead nurturing emails, usually you're guiding them through the whole thing, and it's just a matter of making sure that everything is aligned and in the right place to actually conduct that properly.
Okay, so Fiona, Steve, what are your top three tips, each if possible, on writing good lead nurturing emails?
So I'm going to go first in case Steve's got the same ones as me.
Sure.
So I would say know who your reader is, you know who that person is, adopt an appropriate tone for that person and be very specific about what you're offering in the email and what value they'll get from it.
So my first one is, when you're putting things like subject lines together, if you're doing multiple options, don't be afraid to throw in a bit of a curveball, do something a bit out of the ordinary, something that you think is going to get results but might be a little bit away from what the client would generally do. Second, spend a good amount of time looking at the asset. Don't just skip foot through it. Don't just flick through it quickly. Really, really digest all of it and understand where that value is. And my third one is, before you start writing a massive amount of emails, if you're going into a massive nurture campaign, go into your personal email account and have a little look at all of the emails you've not opened. Have a little read of all the subject lines you've not bothered clicking on and just see the things that really, really don't work for you personally. Take something away from that.
Oh, that's a good tip. I like that one. And I'm just going to add one more to that, which is, if you're thinking about subject lines, a really good thing to do is write it and send it to yourself and see if you would open it when it arrives in your inbox. You know, see if it's noticeable, see if it stands out. So I think that's a good thing to do as well.
I feel like I should just off topic, but in topic, opinions on emojis in subject lines.
Controversial opinion from me. I think that if it's audience appropriate, go for it. I if I get one, like, that's not getting opened ever. But I respect that for some people, it might be audience appropriate. So don't be afraid to take it there if that's what the audience is looking for.
I am of a previous generation. I am of the generation that probably doesn't appreciate emojis and subject lines, probably doesn't actually understand what they are. So I'm very against them.
That is absolutely fair. Well, that's all we've got time for in this episode of Good Copy, Bad Copy. Our next episode is our 50th, and we are planning something a bit extra special for that. In the meantime, if you want to chat about lead nurture emails, you should join us for B2B Copy Chat on 6th of June. That'll be running from 1 to 2 p.m. On Twitter, and that's UK time. If you have any questions or comments about this episode, please feel free to email us via podcast@radix-communications.com. You can also tweet us via Twitter @radixcom. You can find our website at radix-communications.com, where you can also sign up for a monthly email for the latest copywriting tips and insights.